Hello, this is Deborah Anderson, the Black Woman Animator, coming back to you with another video. And in this video, I have Byron Vaughns. Welcome.
Hi.
Can you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Byron Vaughns. I've worked in animation and comics and so on from a number of years in California. And it must have been like over a 30-something year period. And eventually I came back to the South where I'm from, originally from Arkansas, then California, now in Mississippi.
I would like to say that my maternal grandmother was from Marianna, Arkansas, and then my maternal grandfather was from somewhere in Mississippi. Maybe Jackson. So that's kind of funny. So you were raised in Arkansas. How was it growing up?
In West Memphis, Arkansas, a tiny little place.
West Memphis, Arkansas.
Yeah, not just from Memphis, actually. Go across the bridge and you're in Memphis, Tennessee.
But that's like St. Louis and East St. Louis is in two different states, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it's like that. And growing up was actually very nice as a kid. Mm-hmm. Even though you were in a small town, there was a chance actually to get around and do all kinds of things, play in neighbors' backyards and all this kind of stuff. You know, you could, mm-hmm. as a kid, you could have a lot of fun, especially as a little boy growing up. You know, riding bicycles up and down the steep inclines and all kinds of, and having fun going across the railroad track, running away from trains, all kinds of fun things.
Of course, being a boy. What are some of your best childhood memories?
Some of that, actually. Mm-hmm. Of course, like, all the other people that you've been interviewing so far, a lot of them have been reading comics, enjoying animation on television as kids growing up, you know, mm-hmm. same old thing.
Same old, the life of a person in animation.
Yeah, very turned on by the fun of, there was a lot of fun in those early, I'm thinking now about the 30s, 40s, 50s, mm-hmm. Early 60s, animated cartoons, as well as the newspaper strips and comic books. Love Stan Lee's stuff, you know, mm-hmm. with Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko and so on. Very much in love with all that type of stuff. I mean, like, I was the type of guy who would collect Sunday comics and then wallpaper his whole room with nothing but Sunday comics, mainly Pogo. I was a big fan of Pogo. Still, I still think that's the best comic strip I've seen, but as far as newspaper comics.
Yeah. So what was your journey in art and animation during your childhood?
Well, as a child, actually, I was so amazed and mesmerized really by Popeye cartoons. They showed these Max Fleischer cartoons that had a lot of energy and, you know, the character was just so powerful.
Yeah.
That a kid wants to be like that. Mm-hmm. Wants to beat up characters and so on. You know, as a kid, you feel like, you know, you empathize with that kind of character. Mm-hmm. And so Popeye was one of my favorites, and I wanted to get somebody to draw Popeye for me, and I wasn't really thrilled with the results, as I recall, from, you know, handing that kind of stuff over to people to do it.
Right.
And so I ended up having to learn how to do all that stuff myself, and I was very taken by, you know, newspaper comics and trying to draw whatever I saw in the in comics. And whether it's comic books, newspaper comics, animated cartoons, to me that was like one big happy family.
Yeah.
And I wanted to learn, you know, more about it. So When I got the opportunity, I went to California. Actually, what happened, as I recall, I had a male relationship with Bob Clampett. And I remember seeing an ad that mentioned that there was an interview with Bob Clampett in Funny World magazine. And so it got my attention because I remember how Robert Clampett attached to Warner Brothers cartoons, but there was a Bob Clampett that was attached to Beanie and Cecil cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, one and the same. And so I ordered the book and was mesmerized by really what you're doing now, which is an interview with an animation professional.
Yeah.
So ever since, that's been one of my pet things to do is read interviews with animation professionals. Mm-hmm. I still do it. I'm always enthralled by it, and I'm going like, wow, I'm not going to get anything done because I'm reading cartoon research or whatever, you know.
Right.
I've been doing that for some time. I love Michael Barrier's writings, and mm-hmm. one of my dear friends is Milt Gray, who worked with Michael Barrier. I just love animation history and old cartoons and some of the more recent ones too. Depends on what it is. I mean, Vivian Medrano, she did some nice stuff with Has Been Hotel and Hell of a Boss. Took a lot of gumption to actually raise enough money to do projects like that. And I handed to her. She overcame the odds as far as doing an animated two animated series, which is amazing.
So what is your cultural makeup? That's not to say only what's your ethnicity, but what is the culture of where you grew up and the uniqueness of where you're from?
We're talking about growing up in the 50s. So I was in an area that was primarily Black.
Mm-hmm. You know,
there was a that was a Black school that I went to, Wonder Elementary, which became Wonder Junior High, which became Wonder Senior High. And then all of a sudden, everything was shaken up by integration in the schools. And so ended up going to West Memphis Senior High, which was nothing but whites. And so, you know, all of that was going on. And pretty controversial because eventually somebody decided to write a word on the wall, and they had to let everybody go that day.
Yeah.
But believe it or not, it actually was pretty satisfying at West Memphis Senior High because found out that the majority of the people were fine, and especially that there was one particular teacher that I had who was handling a lot of things like, I'm trying to remember the name of that class. But it was dealing with primarily with like draftsmanship and mechanics and so on. That fellow was really nice and quiet and actually knew his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, bottom line is that I had a good time growing up overall.
Do you have like a favorite, you know, custom or tradition from your family that your family did growing up?
Tradition? Oh, well, yeah. Something is depends on what you mean by tradition.
Whatever you want a tradition to be.
I mean, I just started thinking about it was almost like a, how do you describe it? On Sundays after church, you know, my father would take me to Walgreens, and we would get either some ice cream or maybe a newspaper, that sort of thing, and I could see the funnies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that. I mean, like my father actually was a very nice person because he believed in supporting your kids, that sort of thing, especially as far as showing up when he needed to show up for school events and so on. Even though he had to work extremely hard, ultimately, he always made the point to show up for his kids. And on a regular basis, once a year, here's a cultural thing, we would go to the nearby fairgrounds, and we would just have a great time, regardless of going to school. Just take us out of school. It's time to go to the fairgrounds. And we would do that every year. I would enter my work in the contest that they would have, and I would win something. And so it was, yeah, it was very nice growing up and being around someone as nice as my father and mother. My father, actually, he's a Tuskegee Airman, one of the last. Mm-hmm.
And he just turned 103, huh?
103. You've been doing some checking. Yeah, but I helped him later on when I came back. I helped him in his, he wanted to do autographs for people from, you know, like, please the people who were asking things of him. And so I helped him take care of some of those things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's kind of cool that he's still around.
Yeah. So how did both your parents feel about you wanting to pursue an artistic career?
My father, and I think my father basically wanted me to make sure that I got a real job. So you can pull that from almost every single interview that you've had. And that I'm sure somebody would say that.
Yes.
And ultimately, I decided to, I think I got a scholarship with the college, and I ended up, and actually went to, briefly to one college and then to another university. Mm-hmm. They were universities, that's what they were. And I ended up getting my Bachelor of Arts at the second place. It was a college that became a university, University of Arkansas. It's called University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff. So yeah. It was a very small little place that actually had some quality teachers there. I'm thinking now about Henry Linton, who became and John Howard, who were both prominent people in the South, you know, teachers and painters. Mm-hmm. I think Henry Linton, in fact, may still be painting. He did a painting maybe about a couple of years ago for a casino. It's a huge thing. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me whether or not, you know, I don't know if I can do this, Bob, you know, keep doing these. It was an immense thing. I mean, it was really unbelievable. And I don't even know how old he is now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he pulled it off.
Nice.
Yeah, quality work.
So what was your original plan when you got your degree from the university?
Get back into cartoons. I did a little cartoon work here and there at the local paper. Local papers. I would work for different types of papers. Mm-hmm. West Memphis Evening Times, Arkansas Dispatch. These were like little things, hit and miss affairs, you know.
And didn't you work for the Evening Times as a teenager? How did you do that?
Well, I think the publisher knew my father. And when I walked in there, I didn't know that, you know. But I was doing a few editorial cartoons for Margaret Woolfolk, who was very nice. Ultimately, ended up just going from newspaper to newspaper here and there, working for Channel 7, KABC, as a graphic designer. Once I got out of UAPB, just kept, you know, trying out different things.
Yeah. You created the comic Pine Bluff Paradise.
Right.
About for the Pine Bluff commercial.
Yeah, you've been doing your homework. You really have been doing your homework.
Yes. Can you talk about what Pine Bluff Paradise was about?
Yeah, excuse me. Pine Bluff Paradise was about two kids looking for something to do around Pine Bluff. Pine Bluff was a very small place, so they would end up going to the library and spending maybe a week there Then they go, you know, somewhere else. But it was just an excuse just to have these two kids going around doing things. And for me to just have some fun drawing kids. I love drawing kids and little animals. And tell you the truth, it could be almost anything. In fact, that's one thing I'm kind of surprised at. I originally just wanted to do cartoons all my life, but I discovered that, you know, after I went to University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff, it was kind of a little bit different because they open your eyes up to other things you can be doing.
Yeah.
So I have not restricted myself just to doing cartoons, caricatures, whatever, portraits, a wide variety of different things I've worked on. In fact, right behind me, you see this is something I did recently for a charity. Is it this one? Yeah. this fellow is running a charity, and I wanted to help him. And I tend to do that, and I'm doing a lot of either charity things or showing up for schools, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. So just things that interest me, and at the same time, not lose track of the fact that I really do enjoy doing cartoons a lot. So I do a little bit of everything.
You also animated Gusty, KATV popular news mascot. But I was reading a post on Facebook, and it's like, I don't think anybody knows that you did that. Because it's like, oh, the other guy would draw it.
No, you know what? It was just a one-time commercial.
Okay.
He would do the weather guy, no matter who it was at the time at Channel 7, they had more than one guy that would draw Gusty. I mean, like a Vic Shetler, I think, would do Gusty, and then Ron Sherman ended up doing Gusty when he left, you know, things like that. And but they never animated him. It was like a little thing to do just to get people's attention. And so viewers, all of a sudden, when Ron was saying, like, the next drawing of Gusty goes to blah, blah, blah. And you'd see Gusty there, and he's not moving. And then all of a sudden, they cut to him, and he starts moving and starts strutting across the screen. He's surprised. And then he goes, like, and that was a way for them to promote the weather on the news and so on. Because I worked, the art department worked with the weather team, the sports, and of course the news department. That was a long time ago, and they used to do these, I don't know, and they still may do them, I haven't been paying much attention, but these little graphic designs that would appear on the shoulders of news reporters or whatever, the anchors, I would do those. And I did them with two other people that were in the art department. And they always had to make sure they did steady new news designs. They'd have a few old ones in stock, but they would always have to have brand new ones. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did when I got out of college.
Can you talk about you trying to get attempting to get a cartooning job in Orlando, Florida?
Good heavens, you're reading other things too. That just came out. I know where you got that from. I read in a publication, I think it was one of those student things, about looking for help on, you know, from kids out of school.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say kids, I'm talking about, obviously, people who graduated, and then there these various outfits like Disney World would advertise or have a article or something saying that they're looking for people to work at the place. And so I was going, like, wow, you know what? I can't seem to find too many cartoon related places out here in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. And so I decided, you know what, I'm going to have to branch out a little bit. And so I hadn't really been anywhere except in Arkansas. I mean, I would drive from Whitehall, Arkansas to Little Rock, to work at Channel 7, but that was not a big deal. I mean, all of a sudden, that was like a 30-minute drive, something like that. But to go out of state, and I didn't have anybody at the time that could really take me and, you know, do that type of thing. But I thought it would be a great adventure anyway, just to get out of state and try something like that. So I just packed up very early. I figured out about how long it would take, where they were located, all this kind of stuff, got the map going, and went over there, and I found out that, you know, I could get in because I had done all the clearance and so on. I noticed how hot it was out there. It was blazing hot, and I was so happy. I remember being happy to get into an air-conditioned place, and I went to the character design department over there. And I forgot the name of the guy that I met, but he, all of them were nice. I mean, like the guy running it, as well as the, there was a fellow named, Harry, I forgot his last name. It'll come to me later. But anyway, he was a very talented designer over there. And he ended up, from my understanding, doing freelance work over in New York. Harry Gladstone, that was the fellow's name. Anyway, very nice people. They photocopied Goofy, Donald Duck, Mickey Mouse model sheets and gave them to me. And they say, like, learn how to do this, come back, and, you know, we'll see what happens. I was happy to receive the stuff. I looked at it, we're like, oh, yeah, these are old animation drawings, you know, that they photocopied for me. I was very familiar with that type of stuff because, you know, I've been looking at all these type of things as a fan.
Right.
So anyway, took these things, went back to Arkansas and did very little drawing because I realized I wasn't that interested in Mickey Mouse and Goofy. And I mean, those kind of cartoons were kind of fun as a diversion. I liked almost every type of, enjoyed watching certain things. Even today, excuse me, I enjoy all kinds of cartoons. I like the fact that in contemporary cartoons now, compared to when I was growing up, there is a lot more variety in the styles.
Yeah.
I mean, like before, it's like Hanna-Barbera and Disney. And Warner Brothers. That was really about it. I mean, you saw occasionally like a UPA thing with Mr. Magoo or whatever, but I mean, like, in Pink Panther, but it was so rare. And then eventually it started, Nickelodeon came along and some of these other places, and there were other ways to look at things.
Right.
I was not that taken in by drawing the Disney characters that much. I guess I was not a Disney-ite, you know? More like a Warner Brothers-ite, if you want to call it that. I enjoyed Warner Brothers a lot more. That's one reason I looked up Bob Clampett, because I enjoyed his interview that he had in Funny World. I contacted him. We would contact back and forth about maybe I could do my own little book or something and cover him. And it never came to be, but we did keep in touch. And eventually he had me as a guest at a science fiction convention when I finally moved to California. I stayed with a relative first. And then after a while, once I found something, I stayed out there. Kind of like Barry Caldwell and all these other people that were out of the area. And then after a while, you know, they test it first and then they see what it's like. And then they figure, okay, I can do something here. So, and they end up staying there forever.
Yeah, I heard you talk about like a correspondence course too, because you know the commercials from like, oh, can you draw a turtle, draw a pirate? I actually did that. It was called Art Instruction Schools, and I actually did that in high school.
Winky or Winky or whatever it is. They had all kinds of different characters.
Yeah, so like I one thing that I'm highly upset about is that they like interviewed me to try to get me into this the correspondence school or whatever, and I had drawn from a cover of a magazine. I had drawn Allen Iverson, and I felt like it was a very good drawing, and they kept it. And I was like, I should have photocopied that. Oops.
Oh yes, that's what happens when you turn something in. People get ideas.
Yeah.
In fact, this is getting off a little bit of the topic, but I was a little too free with some of my drawings or just proposal ideas before, and
yeah,
I would trust somebody to say, "Oh yes, go ahead and show your work to so and so. It'll be okay." Showed the work, and before you know it, years later, I see, "Oh, they were trying to do some animated versions of that."
Mm-hmm.
You have to be careful about it. Hey, folks, by the way, this is a copyrighted feature of Byron Bonds.
Yes. And I will sue. So was moving from Pine Bluff to Los Angeles, was it a culture shock?
No. About the only culture shock was the fact that I ran into other cartoon nerds that actually enjoyed the stuff that I enjoyed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But there were not a whole lot. I mean, like when I, my father knew a relative that was in the California area, and he said, you know what, why don't you work something out with her and you can stay there and see if you can get somewhere. Mm-hmm. And her daughter ended up taking me to Hanna-Barbera, and I was able to meet Iwo Takamoto and folks like that. Mainly Iwo, come to think of it. He was the main one. And he was looking at some of the work I had done. I had done some comic strips. I should have mentioned that before I went to California, I worked with the Arkansas Arts Council and the Arkansas Arts Center. And mm-hmm. at the Arts Council, I was part of their artisan residence program in Hope, Arkansas, this tiny little place. I think Clinton was from there, if I'm mistaken, Bill Clinton. But mm-hmm. but anyway, it was close to a place called Egg City. I remember that. And anyway, I ended up doing, as an artist in residence, a comic strip. And I was going like, you know what, this is going to be the comic strip I want to do for the rest of our life. So it was a little fanciful strip with all kinds of creatures in it and stuff. And I was able to show it to the kids. They were able to see what I was doing, like working in pen and ink and pencil and so on. And I did these things large, you know. And the originals. And I ended up reducing that. And when I went over to California and I met Iwo Takamoto, I had a very small version of those strips. Mm-hmm. And those strips added up to like this big old pile of paper with strips on it. And I was going like, you know what, maybe I could do storyboards or something. I suggested that she said, "Oh, you don't like doing these storyboards. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work." And I think he discouraged me from actually going in that direction. But I felt more of an affinity for that type of thing, you know, telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
And less when I was a kid, I would do these flipbook things, you know, like all of us do. But I did a number of them. And I was thinking, well, maybe I can go into animation. But, you know, actual animation, not just the animation business. And eventually, though, I was looking for work, couldn't get it at Hanna-Barbera because they kept me on a waiting list, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were busy. I don't know if they were, I think they were doing some stuff overseas, that sort of thing. And they were trying to keep the people that they had busy. And so every time I would, you know, call them or whatever. No, what's his name? Borsma. There was a fellow named Mr. Borsma, Boersman. He was the guy that was hiring young, you know, assistants and that sort of thing to do animation. Anyway, I waited forever. I waited forever to try to get some work from Hanna-Barbera. And finally I said, forget this. Bob Clampett mentioned that there was a Filmation try that place. I went to Filmation, and I met some guys. First of all, when I went there, I went like, wow, they're pretty kind of laid back here, aren't they? I looked at the receptionist, and I'm thinking that she was the type that was either chewing gum or playing around. You know, it's just like you walk into a place going like, this doesn't seem to be very professional. But I kind of like that. Maybe I can break into this place since I didn't have a lot of experience doing this type of thing. And so I did get an audience with the, I believe it was called Gears, who worked there. He was kind of like the storyboard supervisor or something. And they spent time with me, you know, when I would show up and do, you know, show my work and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they would say like, this is a storyboard, this is how it's done and so on. And so you look at it and you're like, okay, I think I'll just take some stuff home and, you know, try some stuff out and bring it right back. And then they would say, yeah, you know what? We're doing something new here now. Uh-oh. And that is, they wanted to do a full-blown real test instead of these little, you know, you try something out, you do a little something, and maybe they're hire you for a little while. They actually had these big old tomes, these huge books that they came out with. They have, I'm sure you've heard about these stock books at Filmation. Mm-hmm. Are you hearing these things? These were reduced versions of the animation, or the layout, whatever they had, storyboard, you name it. And these were actually used so they could teach people how to do their particular type of show. And you have to really kind of study it to learn what they were talking about, because they were different from everybody else in a way. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were still doing limited animation, but they were doing they would really use limited animation to the nth degree. And their whole system was based on the idea of reusing the animation and putting a little animation new where it counted. And so the storyboard person was supposed to think of ways to make it cost effective as well as workable for the stories. You were given a script, and then you were supposed to figure out, okay, where are those model sheets? Where's the stock book? The infamous stock book. Mm-hmm. And all these actions that you could reuse over and over and over. Whether somebody pointing, somebody running to somebody, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you have to figure out a way to use that. And you have to talk to some of them. Larry Houston would remember that stuff more than me. Mm-hmm. Some of those guys were very good at knowing how to use reuse stock. But anyway, to make a long story short, these big old giant books were taken to the house that I was staying in at the time with a relative, and I couldn't believe what was coming up. And they were unloading these big old things. I was quite like, wow, what is this? And so they said, okay, you have to do the test in a certain amount of time and then get it to us right away if you want to work there. I didn't know that they had a serious problem with people, revolving door thing going on there. Where people would work and then they wouldn't work out, and then they would get rid of that person, replace them with another one, or else they didn't like, the people didn't like the work and they would just leave, you know, whatever it was. But and another thing I noticed about just the business at that time, it wasn't very, how do I describe it? It wasn't very popular, I don't think. I know a lot of people that were not working in the business, and it's completely opposite of what it is today, where everybody's longing to get into the business.
Okay.
So Filmation was like the employer at that time. I mean, Disney was using the same people over and over, and they would occasionally bring somebody in, you know. But for the most part, and it was hard, like I said, to get into Hanna-Barbera. They were trying to keep their people busy. Mm-hmm. And I think they were, at that time, they were just getting into using more people overseas. So it was a bit of an interesting set of affairs, because you could actually be like me and get off the street and get some work. And so since it looked like I knew something about what I was doing, they looked at the test results and they hired me. So I started working on something called the ABC Hero High. That's all I remember. The Hero High show. It's all about these kids that went to, teenagers that went to become at a school. In fact, I think it was before Sky High, actually, that live action movie that showed up years later. It was almost the same type of thing. It looked like Archie with superheroes. That's what it was. And so I enjoyed doing that. And in fact, that's where I met Barry Caldwell and a number of other people. And we had a ball. We all enjoyed that floor. That storyboard floor was so full of gags all over the walls, and people just like little teenagers running around taking over the place, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of, and I was no teenager. I was in my 20s. I was in my mid-20s. I was working there. I think I was 27 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it helps if you can cartoon a little bit, you know? That's, yeah. I mean, like during that time, and usually, and I noticed later on when I was there, well, just in the business, it helped that if you had some life drawing and things like that, which is something that I started putting more in my portfolio, because I had some things that I had done. I would draw, you know, freehand sketching and all kinds of things when I was in Arkansas. And, you know, it was nothing new. And so I would just put that sort of thing in. And usually they felt like if you could draw that, you can draw cartoons. But it helps at some of these studios. It depends on the studio. I mean, a lot of studios really emphasize that, you know, I want to see how you would handle this sort of thing, and they would look through your stuff. I remember when Barry Caldwell, after he had done so many storyboards at Filmation, and finally, I think he was there for about 2.5 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, he wanted to go elsewhere. So he rounded up all the storyboards, put them in a tub or something, a box, and then went over to a studio and showed them. And just looking at all of that work at one time, if you're looking for a storyboard artist, I mean, there you go. It was easy to, right. Take time to do that. I don't know why they have to make such a big deal about hiring somebody now. Through all these other walls that they build, you know.
Right.
Stop people from helping them do the product. It was kind of interesting. When you think of it. But so, I guess you have to be modern about everything. So.
Yeah. So this is the part where I list not all, but a lot of the projects that you've worked on.
You're not going to do that, are you? Are you doing the roll call?
Yes. So we can know the people that looked like us that worked on stuff we loved. And as you know, if anything's wrong on your IMDb, let me know. Black Star, He-Man, the Masters of the Universe.
Wait, hold it. Black Star, I'm trying to remember. If I did anything with Black Star, it might have been as an assistant animator.
Okay.
Some of that stuff, I should let you know. After my first time with Filmation as a storyboard artist, then I went into their Filmation's assistant animation department. Mm. So some of the things would spill out, like either I think I worked on Black Star and maybe Shazam, That yep. sort of thing. But
the Kid Superpower Hour with Shazam.
That's yes.
Rainbow Bright, the Pound Puppies, Care Bears, the Berenstain Bears, Punky Brewster, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Smurfs, Mighty Mouse, New Adventures, Beanie and Cecil, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, Bobby's World, Tiny Toon Adventures, Animaniacs, Earthworm Jim, Pinky and the Brain, American Tail, The Treasure of Manhattan Island, Clifford the Big Red Dog, The Proud Family, Ozzy and Drix, Chalk Zone, which I feel like that's a deep cut, Chalk Zone. let's see, Curious George, Horton Hears a Who.
Oh, I did not work on a Horton Hears a Who.
Okay.
Somebody, you're looking at IMDb, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
IMDb, for some reason, I don't know how that snuck on there, but no, mm-hmm. I did not work on that.
Madagascar 3, Penguins.
No, I did not work on that either. The
DreamWorks. Okay, so anything that says uncredited is not true.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, I didn't work on that. But I worked on all those others. I mean, I did keep busy for a long time. Like, I would go to, Ruby Spears in the daytime and do, the Chipmunks. Mm-hmm. And storyboards on that, and then in the evening I would work on the New Adventures of Mighty Mouse with Ralph Bakshi afterwards, and so I had this kind of a weird thing going on where I was working all the time.
Yeah,
and it was fun, actually. It was a lot of fun too, you know.
You also worked on the Pink Panther, Adventures of Brer Rabbit. I know you did the you produced the Oh Yeah cartoons. Blotto,
right?
Blotto, is that Blotto?
That was a one-shot thing. Blotto.
Yeah.
But I also produced and directed on Pink Panther and Lionhearts and stuff like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So either I storyboarded on stuff because I enjoyed it. In some cases, I would do character designs. In some cases, I would do slugging, as they called it then, where you're doing this pre-timing of the show, just do the sheets, egg sheets, or storyboards. I got a big kick, I found out, just basically doing storyboards, producing, directing.
So is slugging the same thing as sheet timing, or?
No. Then, when I was doing it, you would take the storyboard and then you do a pre-timing for all of the storyboard itself. And mm-hmm. that you use that as a guide so that you, when you get the X sheets, exposure sheets, is more detailed timing.
Mm-hmm. So
you nail down everything in the detailed timing. But you do a very rough, kind of like a rough cut before you get to the finish mm-hmm. timing.
So, okay, just in my brain, is mm-hmm. the slugging before the storyboarding and then the sheet yeah. timing before the animation?
No, I'm sorry. No. The storyboard happens first. Well, you, in fact.
Yeah, I'm saying, is the slugging for the timing for the storyboards and the sheet timing is the timing for the animation?
Right. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, what you're really doing, in a way, what you're doing, at least from my experience, when I was working on all of this, we would do the, we have the storyboard and mm-hmm. the voice recording was already done, you know? We've already done those two things out of the way first. Then you'd have a breakdown analysis of the track where you would figure out, okay, how long is the dialogue? And so we figured out how long the dialogue is, and you usually in one, you would write underneath the panel, this dialogue is 3 feet long or whatever it is. And you would get that from the track analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, then you figure out like, okay, how long is that action right after he finishes talking? Maybe mm-hmm. he does a little, this sort of thing, for example. That's an extra amount that you would have happen after the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So that has to be accounted for. And let's say you didn't have this happen in the storyboard. You just had this happen where somebody's talking. you have to add that in the X sheets.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So you're doing detailed things in the exposure sheets. But you're doing a rough timing of everything on the when you're slugging.
Like back in the day, did they do as much ADR as they do now?
Probably more. No, I take that back. I just spoke to a friend of mine. He said there's so much business going on in the X sheets now that there are too many characters running around.
Yeah.
So maybe they're doing it more now. I don't know. But yeah, it can really use up a lot of an artist's time. Mm-hmm. And when I say artist, I'm talking about whether you're an X sheet guy, or if mm-hmm. you're a storyboard artist, or your characters, whatever it is. And you're working for the same kind of money, they're not paying you extra.
Yeah, because storyboarding these days is almost animation.
When I was doing this stuff on a regular basis, I would throw in a lot of extra drawings and so on, because I felt like, first of all, it's fun to do, but mm-hmm. also I thought it would explain things a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, they expect you to go way beyond that. And it can be pretty unfair.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. I mean, like almost every business, sometimes you have to go beyond the call of duty.
Yeah.
Animation is no exception. And a lot of times you have to go way beyond the call of duty. I kind of hate that because you're draining somebody and they may not be working on putting all their efforts into the right thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you have five characters running around in a scene and then somebody says one line throughout the whole thing, you really wonder how much use are those other characters.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't thought out too well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like having you explain like stuff like slugging, because like there's so many roles that don't exist anymore, like mm-hmm. layout and stuff like that, where you kind of try to wrap your head around it and being in the animation industry today because it doesn't exist. So
yeah, I mean, like by the time I got in the business, they still had layout, but they started blowing up the storyboard panels, and that was supposed to be your layout.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had more demands on the storyboard artist to be a partial layout person. And
yeah,
but that it's not that horrible if they if they're paying decent. And they give extra time to do the work. But, sometimes that would happen and sometimes it wouldn't. Most of the time, it wouldn't. You just do it because you want to do a good job.
Yeah. So what would you say you love about animation?
About the same reasons why you probably like it. The fun, the adventure, the things that you can't do in real life, you know, mm-hmm. and in some cases, the things you can do. Believable ability in a character that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to look at that. I mean, you go like, wow, I'm able to get away from the humdrum things going on around me, and I can get into this fanciful world. Yeah, I like that. I like all kinds of cartoon worlds. I mean, mm-hmm. I loved... I love Pogo. I loved Rikki Tikki Tavi by mm-hmm. Chuck Jones. Not to mention the Coyote and Roadrunner and all that. Bugs and so on. Everybody likes that stuff. I mean, like, come on, you can do a better question than that.
I think because you were talking about earlier, like with the storyboarding of the doing the life drawing. What I learned, throughout my career and stuff like that is like. And studying and stuff was that even though not a lot of people think about it, but even though it's cartoons, anatomy is still important. So because that goes to the believability. Like when I was in college mm-hmm. and I took I don't think it was my gesture drawing class, or it might have been my gesture drawing class, but we had to take two or three animals and realistically combine them together. Like we had to draw the bones of it, mm-hmm. and it was like, how can you make a new creature, but it be believable and it work? And so mm-hmm. I think that not a lot of people, even in 3D, like even if you're creating a cartoon, the anatomy is still important in knowing anatomy and stuff.
Right. That's a good challenge.
Mm-hmm. So, Tiny Toons Adventures was named Outstanding Animated Program at the 1993 Daytime Emmys. How did you feel winning that award?
Oh, that was fun. Mm-hmm. I was at another studio at the time. I went to, I was nominated twice. And the first time I went to the Emmy Awards, they passed us over. And I said, I'm not coming back here again. And of course, the year that I do win, I'm not there. And they just send it to me in a box. I was happy with it.
Yeah.
It's on my mantle right now.
I feel like I've heard that story before, too. Like somebody like winning it and like not being there. You co-developed Johnny Bravo. How was that experience?
Oh, it was fine. I worked with the creator of it, Van Partible. He had done the animated short, and they were talking about making it into an animated series. And he and actually Barry Caldwell was freelanced on it. But I was helping him just pull the thing together to see if we can, you know, make it presentable as a series. And once things started off, you know, Van was involved and he did a great job.
So what is your art fault?
Just some things I collected over the years from animation or comics.
And how many boxes do you
have? I'm still trying to figure that out.
The vault
is endless.
Yes.
I mean, everybody's got a collection if they worked in the business and they cared about the work. Some things you don't always want to throw in a garbage can or whatever, you know?
Imagine, like, I mean, at multiple studios, but I've heard at you know, various studios of, like, just throwing all those, like, storyboards away. And it's like, that's history.
Yes.
And people just threw it away.
thank goodness some people kept these things over the years. Even, I mean, especially interesting looking at the things from the 40s when they were so prolific doing those kind of cartoons. You know, you really appreciate it when people kept some things.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of when I was living
in New Orleans. By the way, you can learn from these things too. But
yeah, when I was living in New Orleans, I did a workshop for the 100 Black Men of New Orleans. And I did like a little speaking thing. And then I taught, I like to kind of like have people come away with something. So I taught them how to do a flip book, like the bouncing ball and all that type stuff. Right. And then we judged the kids and picked a winner and they got a McDonald's gift card. And there was like one kid where, because, you know, some people were on CP time. So I had to like rush through my presentation because I'm like, oh, I got to still teach y'all how to do a flip book. And so when I was walking around judging the flip books, there was one kid, I'm like, did I help teach? Like, because his timing was like pretty great. He was like 11 or something like that. I'm like, his timing was pretty great for just like, I had the little image where it was like the different frames and how you do that. And I'm just like, wow, this is like really good. And I think we picked him for first or second place. And then I remember I left. And I was like, oh, man, I want to get the videos of the flip books. And so I asked the guys. It was the same day, like within a couple hours. And I was like, oh, can you all get videos of the flip books? And they're like, oh, they threw it away. I'm like, ah, I didn't tell them how awesome they did. And that's why they didn't have. I was like, dang it. Like, that's because like my natural personality, I don't need like external kind of like validation and stuff. But I learned as a teacher that some people do need that. And so I'm like, try to improve at telling students that they are doing great, because you know when you don't know about animation, you don't know that what you're doing is good. So you like the teacher has to tell you. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
that's a shame actually.
Yeah,
I'm just like, animator.
Yeah. So can you talk about Cartoon Go-Go and what made you start that?
That was actually part of a Cartoon Network thing. They were looking for somebody to go to the Bahamas to have a workshop, animation workshop type of thing. And so I ended up packing up and going over there. And think I was there for a week, something like that. And it was a lot of fun. That was actually part. I used to run a little animation workshop studio for kids called Animation Creations.
Nice.
And it just showed kids. We showed kids how to do their own animated cartoons, you know, using their own characters and adapted things from realistically what's going on in the business. You know, from I would hire all kinds of people that I knew in the business to work freelance and show the kids, you know, how to do various things in the real world of animation, and they would adapt these things. They hated timing, I gotta tell you that. but they were, you know, of course, they loved the, you know, creating character designs. And
so, yeah.
And also the actual animation. There was some, there was a little talent there, you know. But some of these kids were very young, and from the very young to about teenage.
Mm-hmm.
We would, we'd have that. But the main problem we ran into, We didn't count on the fact that a lot of these kids had very busy lives doing other things like sports. And
yeah.
They were overcommitted to a lot of things. And so it didn't really work because they didn't have the time to. And I think their parents maybe were part of the problem. I think they weighed them down with too many things to do.
Yeah.
And so it lasted several years, but it wasn't viable as a regular thing, so I shut it down.
Yeah. What made you want to teach, and what makes you continue to this day to teach?
Well, I teach in a rarely, to tell you the truth. I don't teach as often as I would do in the past, but whenever an opportunity comes up and I figure, okay, this is my chance to do something if I have some time. Mm-hmm. And I figure that, okay, I don't mind giving back. I've done a lot of freebies,
mm-hmm.
showed up for, you know, at schools. I came, in fact, just not too long ago, I was out of state working with a school, a back to school thing. So I'm doing that type of stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's kind of new for me to do it more often because I didn't have time before. I was that's another reason I had to shut down. I mean, like, you really do need time to do these things. And I was always putting in a lot of time on storyboards and
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing. When you're producing, directing, and doing storyboards, and in fact, on Animaniacs, I would say on especially on Tiny Toons, I was pretty much doing all three.
Mm-hmm.
And up to a point, I was doing that on Animaniacs too. I did a lot of storyboards on Animaniacs. But getting back to your point about the teaching,
mm-hmm.
I like it. I like all kinds of different things. I'm finding out that I'm pretty open as far as showing up for things and
mm-hmm.
trying different things out. And I've been doing that off and on for some time.
What have you learned in your life and career that will be beneficial advice to others?
Think outside the box. Be open to trying different things out. I mean, one thing that excited me about the business was the fact that there were so many types of jobs connected to animation.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's endless. When you really think about it, line producer. I mean, like, if you can't draw that well, then you can do something else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many things. And you're needed.
Yeah.
To get the job done. It's a team effort to get a lot of that done. Unless you're going to do like one of the, well, the kids are doing now, which is appearing on YouTube and doing their own little limited animated things, or planned animation, as I call it, where they have little fluid stuff going on with the some limited things about their lives and so on. I think those are great.
Yeah.
they're looking into other ways to do animation other than just working in a studio.
Mm-hmm. What is one thing that you have failed at and how did you overcome it?
What have I failed at? I think everybody fails at just about, you know, you, when you're trying different things. I guess later on, it got to be disappointing when it came to being called to do some projects and then people would back out and they would say like, oh, we have the perfect thing for you. We don't have it. And that ended up being a constant thing after a while. And I don't know. I think people don't always clear things when they should clear things.
Mm-hmm.
So they end up not really knowing what they're supposed to be doing, frankly. There are a lot of situations that exist, not just in animation, but all kinds of jobs where people don't really know they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
It's not confirmed. They don't ask questions. They just jump and do things without thinking about what they're doing. And they get other people involved in it. Before you know it, you're scratching your head going like, what is this all about?
Yeah. I felt like something that I learned from living in New Orleans for 12 years. I mean, when you live anywhere, people are like flaky or whatever. Moving to LA is like people create things to be flaky about. And it's just so interesting. I remember when I first moved here, a couple people were like, oh, yeah, you should come to the studio, the animation studio to like. And I'm like, all right, I don't have a job, so I have plenty of time. But they never follow through with it. And it's like, I never asked to come to the studio, so you didn't have to even mention it. Like you don't have to like create this like fake, I don't know. So it kind of seems similar where since people don't know what not, like people don't know how to communicate or don't know what to say.
There's a lot of that going on. It's not just an animation.
Yeah, yeah.
My father had a problem with that, long after he had retired and stuff. And he thought, okay, life is going to be great. Seems like every other week, there's something that goes wrong with communication between him and companies. And whether it's with the telephone company or with cable or with, you know, fill in the blank. It's going to be somebody taking their turn to use up all your time.
Yeah.
He is now like 100 years old and he's still 103. And he's still doing things like he's got his... my sister running interference to see if she can solve some of the problems. But it is frustrating when people are working and they don't really know what they're doing. They need to ask more questions. Don't bother people if you don't know the answer. Find the answer and then care enough about following through on what you're supposed to be doing. But anyway, that's
not it.
I didn't mean to get into that, but that's...
No, it's fine. It's part of working in the industry. I feel like people should know the real, because I feel like in general, people don't try to find the answer to things. And like, there's no desire to kind of learn. Like, I remember I went to my dad had visited me in Louisiana. He wanted to go see the plantation house from Django Unchained. And we were taking the tour on Evergreen Plantation. And the girl, like, every time you asked her a question, oh, I don't know. Like, so has nobody ever asked this question? And did you not Google after to, like, answer the question for the next person? Because, like, why do you not know? Why are you a tour guide on this plantation if you don't know anything? Like, and so, yeah.
But, you know, as far for the course, you know, there are a lot of people that do know what they're doing. But it's
too
open, though. It seems to be going in the other direction.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm enjoying the fact that I can still draw and, you know, all kinds of different things. And put out that that Substack thing, that newsletter that for creative people. I think that's a great idea, and I decided I was going to do it. And so just recently, I decided to start writing a couple of times. Now it's like four times a week.
To
do some material on separate days about various topics.
Yeah. What is the best advice someone in the industry ever gave you?
That they ever gave me? I don't think there's an absolute for that.
Or what is some good advice that you've received from somebody in the industry?
People in the business in general telling me, hey, you know what? You want to try this place out? You want to try that place out? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it ends up being a very positive thing. I enjoyed working with all kinds of great people in the business. So anyway, to answer your question, it's very general. Yeah, it's usually involved in work because I love working on things. And sometimes it doesn't deal with work at all. It deals with like maybe the family or maybe just helping somebody out or whatever.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time with my family helping on various issues.
Yeah. And
sometimes that would take me away from my work. But you find out that you need to make time for the various things.
Yeah. What do you hope for the future of animation as far as innovation, storylines, characters?
Something else other than a Nickelodeon style is suddenly taking over. But the stories seem to be getting more and more challenging and interesting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's got a ways to go to catch up with live action when it comes to storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
But that seems to be naturally progressing. I mean, like, as the world turns, animation starts getting to be a little bit more interesting year by year. Yeah. I look at some of these new things coming up, and I'm fascinated by what the young people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to see. I mean, they're doing a lot of good things. A lot of interesting things, let's put it like that.
Yeah.
Challenging things.
What are three movies you'd recommend to my audience and why?
Three movies I would recommend and why?
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be animated movies.
Well, that's a very difficult question. To answer, what are your favorites?
This is not about me.
Sure it is. You're part of the process.
Okay, for me, it's like, you know, what about Bob?
What about
Five Heartbeats and like Sister Act 2.
Okay. Let me think about that one a minute. You know, it's funny. As soon as you asked me that question, I was thinking about a movie I saw years ago that I haven't seen in decades. You ever hear of Pressure Point? That was a movie with Sidney Poitier.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I always thought the performances were really nice in that movie, and that kind of stuck with me. What's Up, Doc? With Barbara Streisand.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that. That was a good spoof of slapstick comedy.
Mm-hmm.
By Peter Bogdanovich. Mm-hmm. Lifeboat by Alfred Hitchcock there.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these things are, some of them are, they're different genres.
Yeah.
Still fun. Animation-wise, if I could think of animation, it'd probably end up being a short or something.
That's fine.
Even though, you know, it's funny. I really enjoyed Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs,
mm-hmm.
of all things. There was so much going on in that picture that I enjoy. Lil Abner, mm-hmm. the musical.
Mm-hmm.
There are all kinds of, I'm trying to think of something recent that I really liked. I like the the Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the second one. I saw the first one, and I was blown away by how it caught your attention all the way through the movie.
Yeah.
That was an amazing picture. I would recommend that for any animation buff. I would recommend the multiverse picture. That's amazing. My personal favorite that I would not recommend to hardly anybody, but I loved it, was the Pogo Special Birthday Special by Chuck Jones and Walt Kelly. Boy, it was a misfire, but it was fascinating to look at.
I'll say for Sidney Poitier, I like the one where he's with the nuns.
Oh, Lilies of the Field. Yeah, that was
a very good
one. I saw that with my wife not too long ago, and we both were stunned at it.
I've been trying to watch more like black and white movies, so I also wanted to. I watched Gaslight just to know the origin of the word gaslighting.
Did you enjoy the movie?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. A lot of those older movies, the ones that get all the hype, a lot of times they're worth watching.
Watching a lot of older movies, because now you have movies today that are like 2-3 hours long, and it's just like, okay, it could have ended here. It's like, why are y'all dragging this? But to watch older movies and they'd be like 2 hours long, and it's just a good ride, and you don't even notice that it's 2 hours. That's why I like starting to watch the older movies, because it's like, it's just like some good storytelling.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. It all depends on who's doing it.
Yeah. I feel like another thing is like people are concentrated on the visual effects a lot. That's another thing I liked about the initial, the first Spider-Verse. It was like, it had the dynamic visuals, but the story was there too.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel like in animation, people have been sometimes leaving out the story part. So another hard question. if you could choose an actor to play you in a biopic, who would you pick?
What? Mr. T, I don't know. I'm getting a fool. You know what? I don't know.
It's fine. That's funny.
I can't begin to think about that. I'll let you fill it in. How about that? You fill in the blank.
Okay. So if someone was producing a documentary
Hey, Phil Mendez. What? You ever hear of Phil Mendez?
Man, I've been trying to get, I wish I could get in touch with Phil Mendez. I've heard so many stories about him. But he's
one of the funniest people. He, Barry Caldwell, and Tom Henson are about the funniest people in the industry. They're just naturally funny.
I feel like if I could get Phil Mendez on my channel, I would impress a lot of people, because I don't think anybody knows where he is.
Yes, you know, I would love to know where he is. He is he's one of those rare people. Let's put it like rare cartoonist. He's a natural artist. He loves doing. In fact, I had him at my workshop studio for a while, a couple of times. I think he visited, and he was a good teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those special guys. He knows how to draw those cute animals. He knows how to draw. He can draw almost anything.
Yeah. He's just
very, very talented.
Yeah.
He worked with me also on Lionhearts, as I recall. And I worked with him on one of his pictures, Tom Sawyer, for MGM Animation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what made you leave Los Angeles finally?
Actually, my father called me and asked me to come back. So I did. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, usually I do my thing, but when your father is calling you and he feels like he really needs your help, you know, you pay attention. And
yeah,
this is something that he has rarely done. So I said, okay, he means business, he needs help. So I just shut down everything and went over to see him.
Mm-hmm.
This was right after my wife had passed, and I just felt like, okay, this is a good time for us to get together. So,
yeah. Okay, my last question if someone was producing a documentary about you, what things would you want them to highlight about your life outside of your work in animation?
I knew you were going to ask that because you asked that with everybody that you question.
So you've had time to think about it.
I think my wife had more time to think about it than I did. You should ask her that question. I feel like I was, if you had to sum up my life without animation, be art. How about that?
Right.
Doing comic strips and doing all that kind of stuff. But also just being a nice person, you know, trying to spend more time being a human being, because for a long time I felt like I was more like this cartoon machine.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to slow down a little bit so that I end up being more human and less machine.
Yeah.
And all I can say is that when you get into that animation pipeline, it's very hard to get out. I mean, I was talking just the other day with 80-something-year-old Milt Gray, and he's still at it. He would love to do something else, but he's in a very expensive California, and so you know, gas is crazy. You know, all that thing. So yes. He's working. He's still in the business, working full time. Ron Myrick is a different animal totally. I don't know what to say about him except more power to you, Ron. I don't think he considers himself like a machine, even though I think he is.
I feel like he could go toe to toe with some young people
easily, because he keeps very fit. But I think he, even probably more than that, he loves it to death. Mm-hmm. He really loves doing those exposure sheets and producing, directing. That's his thing. That's his baby. And
yeah.
But the thing about Ron I find interesting is that he still can balance it with, you know, this just being a human.
Yeah.
And I find it very hard. Once I get into those cartoon worlds, it's very hard for me to get out.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to say about it, except those little characters can certainly keep you busy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like you're entranced by it, and you're just, you know, it's that fun stuff that you want to keep going forever in your life.
Yeah. I will say about asking this question, it's like I am intrigued by how different people answer it, because I don't, like with my questions, I don't try to like lead to answer in a particular way. So sometimes people surprise me with how they answer the question.
Yeah, I guess so. Everybody's different. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes I have really spent, my wife says I spent way too much time on this stuff. And she thinks I don't get enough sleep and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you've heard this type of stuff before, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And but you have to be true to yourself, and you just have to get these crazy things out of your head if you're an artist. And so you just go ahead and do it.
Mm-hmm.
You try to make up for lost time, like sleeping and so on later. You know, when you have your breakdown, then it's time to sleep. Then you rest for a while, and you get back up, and you're doing it again. Hey, just ask. All these guys will tell you that whether they is, you know, if some of them I know don't want to talk about that kind of stuff, but
yeah.
That's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it controls your brain, and you just, but at the same time, you're enjoying the ride, you know?
Yeah.
You enjoy doing these things. You go like, wow, I never thought like that before. Maybe if I did this and then, oh, that guy is funny. They're, you know, and before you know it, a day has gone, and you're going like, well, I'm going to see you tonight then. Okay, we'll get this done.
Yeah.
You don't get it done, and then you have to wait the next day. One of the problems with working for the studios is that you have to meet those deadlines.
You're
in trouble. And
get more work.
Say what now?
And you don't get more work.
Oh, yes. And also there are things that happen when you don't, sometimes when you don't get much work. I mean, like, for instance, I ran into a situation like right before my father called, I think it was during the time he was calling or right before, for me to come back to help him. My wife took ill, and so I ended up having to be like, pay attention to her situation. And she ended up passing. And so you're going like, these are new things that are happening in your life, and you have to figure out how to handle them. There are things going on in everybody's family, and you have to figure out ways to, if they can't help themselves, then you have to, if you think you can help, you should try to help. And I've been trying to do that. It's not easy trying to balance all this stuff. But man, that would make a great book, wouldn't it?
I do look forward to your personal projects that you plan on working on. So,
okay. And you can, of course, this is, are you trying to give me a chance to plug my stuff now? Is that it?
Yes. How can we follow what you're doing?
Okay. You need to know that I have a Substack, this newsletter that creators do. You just type in Byron Vaughns, BYRONVAUGHNS.substack, SUBSTACK.com. Mm-hmm. And it's a newsletter basically about me. There's things that strike me as being interesting, or, you know, some things that I want to work on, and in some cases, behind the scenes, things that nobody knows anything about that I would like to share with the world, you know, so on. You can find me on Facebook, and also on Instagram, you would type in Cartoon Zip 657. That's CARTOONZ as in zip, IP 657. That's it. Nice. Anything else I can help you with? Do you need me to ask you a bunch of questions now?
Absolutely not. But I do thank you for allowing me to ask you questions and allowing me to highlight you on my platform.
And thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Yes.
I think you're doing some great work, by the way, interviewing all these people who probably have, I'm sure most of these people have not been interviewed for various reasons. And I think that's a very nice thing that you're doing. I mean, ultimately, I think it's going to be very valuable to have all these people in one place that they, you know, that people can go to.
Yeah, thank you. And to everyone out there, I want you to like so I know it's real. Comment and tell me how you feel. Subscribe to Seal the Deal and sign up for post notifications to show your zeal. And I'll see you in the next video. Peace.
See ya.